Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a chance to analyze health and nutrition in today's modern world. From sunny Southern California, I'm joined by the husband and wife research and writing team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Hello to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Simon.
And how is lovely Southern Cal?
Just beautiful today. Just beautiful. It's a Chamber of Commerce day.
It's a Chamber of Commerce day.
Oh, yeah. We usually call those the Rose Parade. Every time the Rose Parade is beautiful, about 20,000 people move to Los Angeles. So, you know, we always call them Rose Parade days.
Right. As always, our phone lines are open, and our switchboard number is area code 646-378-1120. Or alternatively, you can ask your questions in our chat room. There's a number of areas that I'm hoping we can touch on today, but where I want to start is with a product that can be found in virtually every kitchen cabinet in the nation, salt. In the Middle Ages, it was a rare and much sought-after substance. Today, it is cheap and plentiful. There's so much of it, we even throw it on the roads to de-ice them in winter months. Manny, what is man's attraction to salt? Why do we crave it so much?
Well, I think salt, as you put in one of your articles, may be the first excitotoxin. It's one of the first things that people add to food that would make it taste different and better. And, of course, it's been used since time immemorial to store food. Remember the days of the Old West with the salt pork, where they cooked the pork, stuffed it in barrels full of salt, and right up to the top so no air could get in, and they could travel from St. Louis all the way to Oregon on the Oregon Trail, eating the salt pork over a three-month period without it spoiling. In fact, French kings had caves and other places where they stored their meats. They hung it and wrapped it in salt. And the old days, it would take even a side of beef, and they would roll it in rock salt to seal out all the oxygen to preserve it. So what they found was that when it got damp and the salt got damp and they went to cook the beef, it had a natural flavor. So that started salt use, which would probably occur right after the first caveman's kill, in an area where there was salt on the upper part crust of the earth, and they just started using it, and it's been passed down ever since. And in some countries, particularly high humidity areas like India, and even in states like Florida and in the Gulf, people increase the salt consumption because of the humidity, and frequently they do it to retain more water. The danger is in table salt, which we'll get to, but you too can do a history of salt, and I'd love to hear you tell our audience a little bit what you told me about the English traditions of salt and why salt was so important in Britain and even all the way back to the 14th century and earlier.
Sure, I can share that. In fact, the story that Manny's referring to is a phone conversation we had yesterday or the day before. I had one of those moments. I sat bolt upright in bed. It was 5:30 in the morning, and I was thinking about a great music album that came out, I think, in 1972. It was by an electric folk group, English group, by the name of Steel I Span, and the title of the album was Below the Salt, which at the time it came out, no one had really heard of the term. However, it does date back to medieval times. You would have your castle and your banquet, and salt back then was a very expensive commodity. It was traded. It was literally more than worth its weight in gold. And the banquet inevitably would have a head table where the lord and lady of the manor would be sitting with their valued guests. And that was the only table that actually had a little bucket, if you will, of salt on it. And hence the term, below the salt. You know, only the very rich and very powerful had access to salt. So that's where the term comes from. Ashley, do you have anything to add to Manny's description of why we love salt?
It's part of the natural body, and it's one of the main, what they call electrolytes or minerals of the body. So your body will naturally want salt, and of course it's called sodium. And sodium works with its partners or cousins or family, which are potassium, calcium, magnesium, chloride, phosphate, and carbonate. And they all work together. So that is one of the reasons people want salt.
And also, salt is addicting. So people who feed their children salty foods, whether it's French fries or whatever, are actually starting the first steps of addiction for those children, because that's how they learn to eat salt, and why they crave salt is because it becomes a natural part of the diet that their parents provide them.
And the body, when you take in too much salt and the children eat too much salt and become addicted, actually an addiction to salt, which is a new term that's being used with salt, is the body can no longer produce its natural balance of salt. And the electrolytes get out of balance because it's not producing. It's going to take it in. You're going to take it in. Oh, you know, it gets a little lazy. The body gets a little lazy. So it becomes an addiction then. So you have to take it from the food.
Yeah. Well, look at this way. People are addicted to French fries. They're not necessarily addicted to the French fries alone. They may well be addicted to the salt that's put on it, because I don't think I've ever seen anybody eat French fries without salt. Have you?
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's kind of... And, you know, that's something that occurs to you. You know, when you think about salt and you think about these other foods and you think about addiction and you think about what people do every day and what we've all done in our life every day, you sometimes say to yourself, gosh, I remember when I used to open up a bag of potato chips watching a sporting event and I loved that salt, or late night watching a movie. And really what you wanted, you'd say, yeah, I want something salty. You know, not gee, I'd like some potato chips as much as you're looking for salty peanuts. That's why salted peanuts sell probably 10-to-1 over unsalted peanuts, is because there is a real premium on that flavor and taste.
And salt, of course, is very beneficial to the body if it's the correct salt, which we'll get into, and maintaining the water balance of the body. It helps with cells and it helps to enhance the brain activity, keep the mind sharp. It helps to with the absorption of glucose in the cells. And it's a very important electrolyte in the body.
Now, after all of this, everybody's going, well, gee, why is salt the topic of all that? Because that same salt you enjoy, that little shaker on the table, has some medicine consequences. Strangely, in our country, salt was difficult because we didn't have a lot of natural salt sources in the previous centuries, much like it was in Britain. Britain didn't have a lot of natural salt either. Most of it comes from India, is refined ultimately from the ocean. So people had difficulty getting salt in the Old West. So, and even during the Depression at times, so people consumed far less salt than they might have consumed at another time. So at the end of the day, the salt consumption in our country was not really that high. It became really high when salt became plentiful and you could start buying large bags of it in the store at low cost. So as the cost of salt went down, the addiction to it went up because it was plenty of it. It was available. People could get it almost anywhere. I notice how well I got that out. So anyway, we got to where we are today, where salt went $10 a $15, $20, $30 for a small pound or even a lesser amount at 100 years ago is a huge amount of money. Now salt is one of the cheapest commodities you can buy in the store, so nobody thinks about it.
I'll tell you what, before we carry on, we do have a caller on the line, so let's bring them on. It's someone coming in from area code 773. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, this is Anne in Chicago calling, and I'm enjoying the discussion on salt. I do have a couple questions, and maybe one of them is in regards to a discussion that is coming up. But the first one is, I remember growing up and people had goiters. And so my question is, was it a lack of salt? And that would be in the 50s. And my other question is, what is the difference between regular salt, good old Morton salt, and sea salt, which is what I have started using?
Oh, those are two very great questions. And certainly the second one is something we do have on our list to discuss. Manny or Ashley, do you want to field those questions?
Well, preferably not, but since I'm being forced to, I jump into. Let's talk about goiters, first of all. Basically, they were what we now call sebaceous cysts, or they were in some form a benign cyst, and salt didn't have a lot to do with it. Salt had more to do with other issues in terms of retaining fluid. So the goiter itself is a completely separate issue, and oddly enough, you've heard little or no conversation about them in recent years because a variety of changes in medicine have really eliminated them occurring. So unless you're in a very, very rural area and leading a different lifestyle, it's not a common problem. Let's move on to the next one, and the next one was the differences in salt, which we're going to get to. Salt breaks down into just a couple of categories, table salt, various forms of organic salt, which are sea salt, and some of it's refined salt from basically outside of what I call rock quarries or caves or other things. And the difference is not so much the salt naturally, but how it's treated. Like everything else in life, you can treat salt. And what you see on the table is called sodium chloride. And basically, it's those who have taken chemistry, it's a sodium molecule, Na, for sodium, and chloride, Cl. It's a single molecule of chlorine that's used to basically cleanse the salt and to turn it white, because natural salt isn't necessarily pure white. So much like pure white sugar looks so beautiful, pure white salt is treated to have its color. But along the way, it eliminates all of the natural minerals in the salt. So your refined salt now has zero minerals, where your organic salt has up to 80 different minerals and compounds that are beneficial to humans. Then they take a product called sodium aluminum silicate, which is a synthetic product which is put into the salt, which is an anti-caking substance, which is why your salt flows so beautifully thin. If those of us who were born in the 40s and 50s probably remember going to the restaurants and seeing a saltine cracker in a large salt container, or sometimes even sugar containers, to absorb the moisture to prevent them from caking. One day, the industry decided, that's a lot of work. Why don't we just add this sodium aluminum aluminosilicate to it, and that way it won't clump, and people won't have to break up their salt or break up their sugar. But they certainly didn't do any of us a favor, because that combination of the chloride molecule and the aluminum molecule rests in your kidneys and it stops kidney functions, which we'll get to in a moment. But those are the prime differences. The organic salt is generally refined from the sea and retains all those natural minerals, et cetera, in them. It's done in a simple evaporation process. The chemical industry, particularly the table salt manufacturers, try to say, oh, well, if you don't refine it, it's possible you get something, you know, in there that can make you ill. Well, when you evaporate something, you're essentially boiling to remove the liquids, and we all know you got to give above 212 degrees to evaporate water. So the net result is the likelihood of someone becoming ill from sodium salt is very rare. And I've never seen anything reported that anybody had any health problems from sodium natural salt, where there's just thousands of articles from cardiovascular disease to kidney disease about the effects of table salt. You're from Michigan or Chicago, you said?
Yes, but I grew up in Michigan.
Oh, yeah. So you probably have seen more of that up there because in the Midwest and colder climates, they use salt much more than they do in the warmer climates.
Mm-hmm.
So does that answer your question?
Yes. Fascinating discussion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
And I wanted to correct something or add on to something. As far as the goiter is concerned, it actually is a thyroid response. And I think it was during the 50s that they added something to the salt to keep people from having thyroid problems, which is why there is not the percentage of high goiters right now.
Well, that was the reason for putting iodine in salt.
Yes, iodine. I went blank this morning. I'm going, what?
And those of us can remember in the 50s when Morton Salt suddenly went up and said, we have iodized salt, and they made a big thing about it. And then once the salt passes, slipped into the background. Thank you. I forgot it was iodine to stop the problem.
Right. And I think Ohio was actually one of the first states that they did experimentation on and adding iodine to the salt, which stopped the goiter problem. And we were talking about, Manny was talking about the anti-caking agent, which is aluminum. And the problem with the aluminum is that aluminum salts, which is part of the salt, if you do not buy organic salt, actually goes into the brain, and it can cause seizures and reduce mental facilities and eventually creates plaque that goes into Alzheimer's later in life. So even if somebody isn't saying, well, I don't have a response now, it does build up in the body, and you cannot remove the aluminum. So it's one more toxic thing that's in the body. I mean, I shouldn't say you can't remove it because if you go to the homeopathic doctor who does chelation, and if you're healthy enough to do chelation, they can do chelation that will actually start to eliminate the aluminum in the body. But it's highly toxic, and the anti-caking agent, which is fancy for their salt, is just not healthy for people. And one of the other problems is the fact that when there's supposedly FDA, when they approve salt, there's 2,000 milligrams or to 2,400 milligrams permitted on a 2,000-calorie diet. That, to me, seems awfully high. And I say it's awfully high because the organic salt that comes from the organic fruits and vegetables and the things that you're taking in are not added into that person's daily diet because you don't know how much salt is in the actual food you're taking in. For example, if today you ate beet greens, which are really great antioxidants and very healthy for the liver and the kidneys. Well, it's also very high in salt, but it's a natural salt that your body can organically break down. And it's because it's organic, it naturally slowly goes through the body and allows you to use up all the nutrition because it also comes with its own enzymes. So, again, you're not having it's the organic versus the toxic ones that have the anti-caking agents.
Is salt an excitotoxin?
It's not categorized as one, but it has a similar effect on the brain because salt can penetrate the blood-brain barrier. But the real issue with salt is not so much in the brain, which is where cytotoxins like MSG and other ones affect you. It affects more in the other organs, particularly in the kidneys and liver. For example, you know, humans only need a small amount of sodium. And you find a lot of natural sodium in your fruits and vegetables, but they're mixed with minerals and vitamins, which means your body absorbs them slowly. But table salt is unbuffered. It has nothing that slows it down. It enters the bloodstream much quicker and gets into your organs, your kidneys, et cetera. And those people that have cardiovascular disease or have really paid much attention to it know that it slows the kidneys. It contributes to the disruption of the cell balance and fluids in your kidneys, and it can calcify, scar, and even destroy muscles. The calcified salt in your kidneys we all know as stones, and anyone who's ever had a kidney stone knows that excess salt can be extraordinarily painful on the way out. In fact, if you eat salty foods for a long period of time, again, it causes dependency like caffeine and nicotine. And if you reduce the salt intake at that point, it causes physical withdrawal like the other drugs. And what's even stranger is Ash and I, when looking at it, forgot that it was common in China and Asian societies for years to the best method to commit suicide was to take high quantities of salt and water to kill yourself. So people who are eating high quantities of salt every day and building these up in their kidney and liver could one day achieve a level that could kill themselves. And usually that death occurs by stroke, heart attack, or
high blood pressure,
and all those side effects. So death is immediate in an overdose, but death is certain if your body is overdosed over a long period of time.
And because it works with the other electrolytes, what happens is you get if the sodium is elevated and the potassium in your body goes to rescue it, then it's working overtime because they are cousins that tie up together, and the potassium tries to excrete this, and it's working overtime trying to get this out of your body. And then it is when you get the kidney dysfunction and problems with the kidneys. And it causes, in the end, an acid-base imbalance. You get your pH thrown off. It affects everything else, like your calcium, magnesium, chloride, phosphate, and carbonate. So everything they all work together, and the body gets thrown out of balance when you take too much sodium in. And, of course, we didn't really get into the sodium nitrates and things that are hidden with salt.
Well, that's the next topic when you're ready for it, is it's not just the salt, it's the other salts. For example, if you couple those salts with sodium nitrate, which we're going to discuss, MSG, which is a salt, monosodium glutamate, maltodextrin, which is made from corn but has 14% salt from MSG, then your kidneys are really overloaded. So if you look at that, on the inclusion of all those, it doesn't matter what you see on the can, because at the end of the day, you're eating four or five different sources of salt, and when you're ready, we'll get to sodium nitrate and some of the products on the shelf, Simon. So if you have a question, jump in.
Actually, what I want to go back to is the aluminum that forms part of the anti-caking agents.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, aluminum is a neurotoxin.
Yes, it is. It is a neurotoxin. And it's so toxic in the body that it can cause extreme nervousness. People may get headaches and not understand why they're getting the headache. They may associate with, an allergy from the day before food or an intolerance from the day before food, and then get the headaches again and not ever put together the fact that it's the high level of sodium with the aluminum in it that is actually causing the neurological problems of headaches. People get migraine headaches and don't understand why. It also will cause a decrease in your liver and kidney function. People will have slurred speech. You can have memory problems. There's a lot of things that happen neurologically because you're right, Simon, it's an absolute neurotoxin.
We talked about this when the caller was on the line. Not all salts are created equal.
Right.
What does the normal person have to do, when they're going out to buy salt? What should they look for?
They should look for organic salt, because organic sea salt is definitely different. It's pure. It's pure salt. It's a mineral that your body will use naturally. Your body can naturally break down and slowly break down the organic salt. So if you're cooking and need to use salt, which actually we don't use any salt at all, then, I may tip the shaker at the end of the day, but because the foods all have natural salt in them. But organic salt would be the number one choice if you're going to pick it off the shelf. And it's just a more the complexity of the organic salt is something that and the sodium in that organic salt is something the body can actually use from a health reason for the mineral. It's slowly absorbed. It's just much better for the body.
Okay, the human body does need an amount of salt.
Correct.
I mean, it's a very beneficial thing to have. But how do we get it if we don't use the salt shaker?
Well, first of all, it's prevalent in most natural foods. So when you have fruits and vegetables, the fact is you're actually consuming salt as you go along, and that's your first source of salt. Your next source of salt would be, of course, the natural version, the sea salt, and the other one would be to determine a daily allowance and not rely on the FDA. Pick one that is safe based upon your history, your family's history, whether you have a history of cardiovascular disease, for example, in your family, and determine which one works best for you. The lady from Chicago, if she had a mother or other relative that had just suffered from some of these problems when they were younger, then it's something that she has to watch for. If you have a history of cardiovascular disease in your family, then certainly watching salt consumption is more important to you than if you've never had a heart attack historically in your family. So environmental factors help determine that. But science has proved that you want to keep your salt level to the very minimum, and you want to increase your potassium to cleanse the excess salt out of your kidneys. And this becomes a problem because we'll discuss packaged foods and how that salt relates to your body. Yeah, once Ashley adds to this.
Well, I was going to say, I think that having a list, even if you pin it on your refrigerator with a little magnet, because we all have the magnets, I think, magnets from all over, right, hon? So we put the magnet and on the refrigerator door, I have a list of high-salt foods and low-salt foods until you get to know them. And for example, your beans, your legumes, your, say, black-eyed beans are high in salt. So there's certain things like your chickpeas. Like you'd normally think, you know, chickpeas, not in the can, because can comes with the sodium nitrate and the hidden MSG and all the other crap that they put into it. But the actual chickpeas that you make, and the garbanzo beans that you make, kelp and your leafy greens are very high in salt. So you can actually take these in from your natural, normal, everyday eating. Spinach, Swiss chard, these are things that are high in salt. That will allow your body, and your body can process the salt so that because it's an organic, it's slowly absorbed, and your tissues need that salt. So we're not saying you have to eliminate all salt. It's just taking the correct salt into your body. And again, to say that it's 2,000 milligrams to 2,400 for a 2,000 calorie diet, I don't know how they measure that. I mean, when you actually get your blood serum done, a normal blood serum is 135 to 145 MEQ.L. Now, that's a low level in serum. So how do you say then that you turn around and you should take this much salt in? It's just very confusing to me, and it's confusing because of all the conflicts of interest that happen when you try to do research or try to find the correct amount, the conflicts of interest with the FDA and who is actually approving it and which companies are pushing through. Is it the salt industry that's pushing this through on the amount? So it becomes confusing. So I don't know if that answers your question, Simon. Does that answer your question?
Sort of. Right.
Oh, sort of. Okay, so give it to me again then.
All right. I'll come at it from a different angle.
Okay.
Where is the line between enough salt and too much salt?
I don't think anybody has really determined that. And one of the reasons is the industry doesn't want that determined. You know, and when it comes to people like the American Heart Association, American Kidney Association, frankly, I consider them spineless. We heard a story from a research doctor yesterday about how his research had proved that our basic research that MSG and all these other things basically do penetrate the blood-brain barrier, cause addiction, et cetera, and how he helped somebody with a test. And when it came time to write his report, he was afraid to really state it clearly, so he left a really...
Because he wouldn't get more grant money.
Yeah, he was so worried about grant money and retaliations that he basically took a benign approach when he wrote his report because he was afraid of criticism.
Which we read constantly and see constantly from, and when we interview other scientists and medical physicians, we're finding this consistent across the board. So it's hard to answer that question. I can't answer that question for you, Simon. I'll keep researching it, though, and keep trying to find an answer, though. I will. I've spent a lot of time over the years trying to find the answer.
Yeah, so that gives you the level of frustration. There are questions, as we point out, the food industry really don't want answered, and they certainly don't want it on billboards because it would change habits throughout a country, which leads us to the next topic. There's a reason why. If you take a look at, and I picked up, we have very, very few items that are not organic in our house right now, but there's this leftover bottle of Wishbone Russian dressing. And according to this, 2 tablespoons is the amount of a serving. I don't know anyone who can fix a salad and survive on 2 level tablespoons of salad dressing.
Can you, Simon? I mean,
now,
just think so, right?
my wife orders like Sally and When Harry Met Sally, and, you know, so she has her dressing on the side. So when I look at it, the amount of dressing on the side they serve, it looks like it's probably about 6 or 7 tablespoons at least, and that's for someone who's really sparse. So let's take a look at this. The total amount of salt in a 2 tablespoons of wishbone dressing is 350 milligrams. So if it takes 4 or 5 for that little amount that Ashley has put next to her plate so she doesn't eat much, then that's got 15 to 1,750 milligrams of sodium in it. If you pour a normal amount of salad dressing over, that salad probably has 2,000 milligrams of salt, which incidentally is the my daily dosage recommended by the FDA. So you take a look at that meal. If it has meat, the meat has probably been salted by the chef before he's cooked it. He's probably put salt in the vegetables when he boiled them or steamed them. So across the board, everything on that plate in a restaurant has a fairly large amount of salt. Then you throw in the salad with the salad dressing. Someone could be eating 4,000 milligrams
or more per day.
No, in a single meal in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And at home, fixing a meal like that could easily be 2,000, 2,500 milligrams of salt. Now, if you have a child who has a normal breakfast who may have 300 to 500 milligrams of salt in these packaged foods, then goes out and has a McDonald's hamburger and fries for lunch, which is probably another 2,000, probably more in a McDonald's and the fries because they're usually salty, and then comes home and has a 4,000 milligram dinner or goes out to dinner with his parents, that child may have 8,000 milligrams of salt a day, which incidentally helps us understand why there's so many liver transplants, kidney transplants, why people are suffering from a variety of kidney diseases, increased strokes, heart attacks.
Cancer.
I mean,
one thing leads to another with the imbalance of your pH because it throws the entire pH off, and your body just retains all this fluid. So you go from a good thing, which you need are this organic salt, which is natural in the food, natural in sea salt, to this additional cake, I mean, aluminum, sodium chloride that is thrown into everything, and in addition to your sodium nitrates, your MSG, you have this additional salt that's actually very toxic to the individual, and they don't even realize how toxic their bodies are. So, and worse than that, Simon, I think the people who were additionally ignored are the older people, especially the elderly who are now in nursing homes, who are now being fed, you know, they're considering high-quality food, but it's cafeteria food from opening cans that are high in sodium, and they absolutely cannot break down the sodium chloride. And their electrolytes are already off because their kidneys are, you know, they're older, and the kidneys are older, and it's affecting the elderly. Gets affected even more, so that both the children and the elderly, and if they have a chronic disorder, this is horrible on the elderly.
Manny, earlier in the program, you mentioned sodium nitrate.
Sodium nitrate. Well, sodium nitrate is primarily used to make beef that looks grayish that you see aging, they put sodium nitrate on to make it look that fleshy red that people seem to like in the markets, when aged beef itself looks gray. Then they add it to non-organic products like bacon, sausage, hot dogs, pepperoni, deli meats, and almost every kind of non-organic processed meat, you know, bologna sandwich meats. Yeah. So at the end of the day, when you go to a baseball game, a football game, or whatever, and you start eating this, or go to a deli and start ordering sandwiches, and you're eating a huge amount of sodium nitrate besides the MSG and all the other chemicals that we've been discussing. So there are a variety of tests, for example, that show that sodium nitrate increases pancreatic cancer by 67%. It increases the risk of leukemia by 74% and the risk of diabetes by 40%. So there's really no disclosures or warnings on the labels. In fact, the sodium nitrate is not really labeled as clearly in terms of the amount that's in it. So basically, everybody who's eating anything from that deli section of the market with packaged foods is eating high amounts of sodium nitrate. I don't think it's any secret that people who eat a lot of pastrami, corned beef, and all these other items every day have heart problems, and it's quite common to see doctors and articles on giving up not only red meat, because the real problem with red meat, besides the genetically modified corn being fed to it, is it's salted with sodium nitrate to make it pretty to go to the market. So basically, they're turning nature's food, beef, into a carcinogen.
Well, and part of the problem, they have to actually do that right now, because they have to, is they're selling GMO cattle that is sick, because if you force feed GMO corn to cattle, they will become sick and they will die within 140 to 180 days. And so subsequently, who knows what that color of that meat is? I think we'd all be scared if we actually saw what the real meat looked like.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't buy it. So who wants to buy non-organic meat that has sodium nitrate?
And to illustrate what sodium nitrate really is, it's one of the principal ingredients in fertilizers, all pyrotechnics. It's the most important ingredient in smoke bombs. And if you purchase a large amount of it, you can sure the FBI will show up, because that's one of the ingredients that terrorists use to make homemade bombs. It's a solid rocket repellent. So basically, they're using rocket repellent and explosive devices on your meat to make it look prettier, because they think you'll buy it. In fact, it's so bad, there was an accumulation of the studies. 20 different studies were combined involving more than 1 million people in 2010, and the study found that eating just 2 ounces of processed meat each day result in a 42% increase in the risk of heart disease and a 20% increase in the risk of diabetes. And I can assure you, when you go to the deli, those corned beef sandwiches and pastrami and the ones you buy elsewhere or make at home have anywhere from 4 to 8 ounces. And even if you go to a Subway, they may say they're healthy, but if you're having some type of pastrami, bologna, or salami sandwich that has 6-8 ounces of meat in it, double meat, then you're talking about 5 times the likelihood that we just gave you that you're going to have some form of kidney or heart disease as a result.
Or diabetes, because with the fact that it affects the pancreas, and that high percentage of what they're saying can cause pancreatic problems, it also alters the glucose, the insulin in the brain. So sodium nitrate is really very toxic. And again, it's the wrong kind of salt. Your body can't process it.
So if you got somebody who has a sandwich like that and then pours table salt on it, or has a bologna sandwich with a side of fries or something, then you can imagine the amount of salt and sodium nitrate that goes in the body. And if we have any listeners at all that have any history of diabetes or heart disease, these are two areas they can significantly change their health by cutting out foods that have sodium nitrate and watching every label. And in my case, I gave up packaged food many, many years ago, so salt hasn't been a problem for me. So despite my other health problems, and even despite the fact that Vioxx gave me what some people call a heart attack, which, of course, the makers of Vioxx deny, I have no problems with my veins. The last time I had I had an MRI, I had a CAT scan, and I had a variety of other heart tests. I'm told my veins look like a 40-year-old and that I'm never going to have open heart surgery for clogged veins. And I think it's in part because I gave up all forms of salt from MSG to table salt in my 20s. And as a result, my veins look a lot better than most of the people around me.
Okay. I want to go back to sodium nitrate. It's being used purely for the aesthetics of the color?
No. Sodium nitrate, like all sodium products, is a preservative. When you process these kind of red meats and you're going to slice them thin and you're going to put them in a package and ship them all over the place so they might sit in the deli counter for days, there became two issues with it. One, they wanted to spike it with sodium to give it a sharper flavor, and especially considering these come from tasteless GMO meats, they had to do something to spice it. So rather than have huge amounts of sodium indicated, they use sodium nitrate, which gives it the flavor of table salt and also acts as a preservative. So there's some hidden benefits to them using the sodium nitrate by enhancing flavor, taste, appearance, everything, and getting away from the simple label of salt. And incidentally, about sodium nitrate, there was a time in the 90s when the USDA in the 70s, the USDA tried to ban sodium nitrate from food, but were overruled by the political might of the meat industry because they relied on it so much. So here's a product that even the USDA branch of the FDA basically feels should not be in food, but the politics of the FDA have kept this in food for the last 40 years, much to the detriment of every American who's having heart problems or had a stroke. And if you can imagine taking all the table salt and all the sodium nitrate out of our food system for the last 40 years and the effect it would have on the amount of money that people spend, insurance companies spend, on heart surgeries and heart treatment, the financial impact would have a massive effect on Medicare, Medi-Cal, and private insurance companies, not to mention the grief and pain and suffering of families who deal with family members who have suffered from this type of salt. So, you know, removing it from our entire food system would dramatically change the health of our nation.
And, Simon, also, in addition to the sodium nitrate, they add food coloring. And many of the food colorings that they add to answer your question also causes, first of all, a lot of those food colorings are actually banned in Europe. So they don't even allow them in their food processes over in Europe. But I guess because they don't allow GMO feed going into their cattle, they don't have to. I mean, they have natural-looking food. So it is also one more allergy and tolerance response that happens to the body. So the sodium nitrate causes it, then you have dyes on top of it and the MSG on top of it, and you have all this impact that is occurring that causes delayed food intolerances and allergies to occur to people. And some people may not even realize that that's really what's going on in their body.
What does too much salt actually do to the body? I've heard many talk about, you know, kidney issues.
Right.
You know, what are the other potential dangers?
It causes irregularity in the heart. It can cause extreme fatigue. It affects the breathing. And I'm going to get down to the nitpicky little area that what happens is that the salt, the excess surplus salt causing the potassium levels to increase. They then penetrate the sodium penetrates the cells, each cell in the body, then becomes swollen. So then the swelling affects, you can just imagine, Simon, every cell starting to swell. So then you get inflammation in the body. And then that inflammation is going to cause all these other problems. But one of the main ones is it going to happen in the heart. So, and it affects elasticity of the skin. You can't put out urine, which means that you become toxic. I mean, it's a very, very toxic thing to have too much salt in the body.
Well, let's add the big one to me. Our books are a lot about obesity and gaining weight. And this is a shocking one to me. 1 ounce, 28 grams of table salt causes the body to retain 6 pounds of excess water. So when you take a look at the, and you add up the amount of salt that people are consuming a day, on a really big day, they can just blow up and basically gain 6-7 pounds and maybe more. In fact, there are times where I've had friends say to me over a weekend of partying, oh, my God, I got on a scale this morning, I gained 8-9 pounds, oh, you know. But why are they gaining 8 or 9 pounds? They're gaining the 8 or 9 pounds because they're having too much salt over that weekend and retaining fluid.
And salt, because this particular salt that has the aluminum in it is very caustic. So what happens when something's caustic? I mean, think about an open wound, and you throw this salt onto an open wound. It hurts. You're gonna, yeah, I mean, it's going to burn and affects all the surrounding tissue. So for protection then, the cells within your body, they release water. It goes into the various in-between cell fluid to dilute the salt. The cells then give up more water. They have elasticity in the skin, starts shrinking, and it turns into a complete chemical imbalance. And then, of course, again, one is a, you know, falls into the potassium, falls into each one affects everything else. That then affects the electric impulses in the body, affects the neurological problems. I mean, everything affects. One imbalance causes the whole body gets out of balance. And again, you're dealing with the pH that happens. It becomes an electrolyte acid-base imbalance, which then goes into your pH. And as we talked with, like, acid rain, the body's no different. You're going to have toxic effects that happen as a result of, you know, let's just say if too much salt is like a toxic rain on the body. I think that would be a good analogy. Don't you, Manny?
Yeah, I think that is a good analogy.
Acid rain. It's an acid rain on the body. That's a good, I think, analogy. Would that make more sense to you?
Yes, it certainly would. But I'm going to wind the clock back a few decades.
Okay. I don't know if I can go there.
Right.
I'm sorry, Simon.
All right. Before refrigeration, salt was most definitely used as a food preservative.
Absolutely.
What did it do to the food? How did it preserve it and yet keep it edible?
Well, first of all, so by packing something with salt, you're reducing the amount of air because air is the catalyst that causes most deterioration in food. So that's probably the biggest single reason, is that you're getting away from that. Other than that, salt permeates the beef and creates a crust, which stops the exterior deterioration in the meat, and that ultimately is what prevents it from spoiling.
But how come, you know, it wasn't too salty to eat?
Well, what happens is, no, first of all, it may be. If you're used to eating a lot of salt, then you don't notice it. If you don't eat a lot of salt, in my case, I notice salt immediately, so everything's relative. In our previous discussions, we talk about how, we talk about how eating certain chemicals dulls your senses, like MSG, for example. Well, I think if you eat a lot of salt, it also dulls your senses to salt and creates an intolerant reaction, which is part of what's called delayed intolerance. So at the end of the day, people who eat a lot of salt don't notice they're eating a lot of salt.
And your body needs the salt at that point because you're no longer producing your own balance. So you're out of balance, and then you throw more, and your body just keeps wanting these more toxic ingredients.
Right.
And it's a never-ending thing, which is why people get sick.
And also why they become addicted.
And obese.
Right, so it becomes a vicious cycle.
It does. But I'm sorry, man, go ahead.
There's something strange about the human body that no one's been able to explain to me, is that when the human body becomes addicted to something, rather than repel it, it oftentimes demands more. And that's the case with things like high fructose corn syrup, for example. Instead of the body going, oh, I can't eat this, it goes, oh, give me more of it. Why? I don't know. We've talked to a number of different doctors and reasons why. We've heard theories why. I've read different theories why. But nobody's really been able to quantitate this into a really understandable response. So there's a reason that your body does all this, but no one's really put their finger on it as of yet.
And to make matters worse, well-known allergist that we recently spoke to was informing us that one of the highest allergy intolerances tested right now is high fructose corn syrup and MSG. So you have body responses occurring again with salt, and you also have the body occurrences occurring with corn, and the combination is absolutely toxic. Then you throw in the GMO, you've got some pesticides and you've got, you know, your various bacteria that they've used to create this crap, and so the body just can't, the body can't handle it.
Yeah, it's being assaulted. It's really a chemical assault on the body.
Okay, let's talk about packaged foods in your local Mega Mart. Why is there so much salt in them?
That's a good question. We go back to the GMO conversation, that products that are made from genetically modified foods have little or no taste at all, and it compels the manufacturer to resort to salt, MSG, and other things to enhance the flavor because they feel they can't sell their product unless they enhance their flavor. And in a nutshell, that's their excuse. In some instances, they use it rather than deal with other chemicals. In other words, salt is so cheap, it's a chemical of choice cost-wise. MSG is so cheap, it's a chemical of choice. It allows them to eliminate buying organic foods in season. It allows them to skip dealing with tariffs. It allows big corporations to skip dealing with foreign governments and, for example, banana republics that grow basically cane sugar because they don't want to deal with these people. So at the end of the day, it's a shortcut, and that's probably the simplest description of it. Most of this is just a shortcut for the industry to get to the point they want to be without using real flavors and real products.
I can honestly say that I think if people actually had, you know, when you make a recipe, Simon, and you start from scratch, you start with the flour, and you start with, you know, water, and you start with the things that you're adding to the recipe. If you were able to take that particular package and every package on the shelves at the grocery store and put them in the pot to actually see what they are, I don't think you would ever want to eat it. In fact, as a kid, if my mom put that crap into my food, and each one of those ingredients, I had to look at it and smell how god-awful they must be, I actually would not eat them. So why then do we go take our hard-earned money to go to the store, do this quick, easy fix, pick them off the shelf, and bring that crap home and feed ourselves, feed the tissues and the cells and our little spirit that holds in this body, and disrespect our body this way? Why do we do that, Simon? I don't understand. I mean, when you actually start doing that breakdown, it stopped me from ever buying this packaged crap on the shelf. I literally put thought into every single thing I pull off the shelf to bring home to feed my husband.
And she horrifies me some days. This morning, I don't eat saltine crackers anymore, and so I really have never looked at the label since we started doing all this research.
And there's stuff in the cabinet that I've kept for the research.
Right. So Ashley pulled out what looks like a three-year-old box of saltine crackers and says, you know, honey, this has high fructose corn syrup along with a large amount of salt in it. And I'm going, high fructose corn syrup in a simple thing like saltine crackers? And that's the concern. Unless you look at every single label, you're at times shocked, if not horrified, by what you find in these things.
And they change. They've changed buyers, sellers. They change. Because one of the things last week after the show, Manny was talking about his favorite ice cream. So, of course, Simon, I got a Jones for ice cream. I had to run out for ice cream. I ran over to Baskin-Robbins. I go, honey, saying this is the safe one. So I thought, I'm just going to have a cheat. I'm going to cheat today. I'm going to have my little bit of scoop of ice cream. And then as I taste the ice cream, because I've been away from GMO foods and high fructose corn syrup, I said, Manny, look at the container. Are they still using honey? So then Manny looks at it and he says, do you know there's high fructose corn syrup in Baskin-Robbins?
Wow. And by the way, Häagen-Dazs is one that used honey until, I think it's Cargill bought them, or Unilever, and they immediately switched over to high fructose corn syrup. So, in fact, Ben & Jerry's, which everybody loved and advertised for years how natural they are, Ben & Jerry's is basically no longer organic or natural.
But the point is that you never know when somebody's going to sell out or, you know, decide to go cheap with their product while still charging you the same. You know, and that's really the only point of them doing it. And it's not really any thought process of, oh, this is really going to be healthy for a person. You know, and I guess that's why we keep talking about going organic. I mean, because, you know, it's the body, you only get one body and the life is too short to be spend time sick. I certainly don't ever want to be sick again, and I certainly don't ever want to put my husband back in a wheelchair because of the food.
I actually had an adventure in my kitchen cabinet a couple of days ago.
I can't wait to hear it.
Simon, are you able to look at foods without looking at labels now?
No. I have to admit that knowing the pair of you, has changed my view on life. Right? Everything I pick up, I look at the stinking label. Anyway, I was doing some research on salt, and I discovered that, and I don't eat these things maybe once every 6 months, but the 10-cent package of ramen noodles, you know, you just add hot water and they're good to go.
I used to love those. Used to being
right.
Yeah.
All you need is two of those and a delicious cup of condensed cream of chicken soup, and you've got 150% of the salt you need for an entire day.
That's right. I know, it's scary, isn't it?
Oh, I was horrified.
Mm-hmm. And if people, I would do more of them right now if I could, but we've eliminated almost all those foods out of our cabinet, but what few we have, I mean, even Trader Joe's with a reputation, this salad dressing has the same amount as Wishbone. Even things like I pulled up a Polynesian sweet and tangy sauce that's a stir-fry dipping and glazing, and that has 350 milligrams of salt for 2 tablespoons. Even stag chili, if you look at a can, a small serving of it has, I just had that in front of me, as an equally, it's got a 1,080 milligrams for what I would describe as about a 5 or 6 ounce serving, in fact less, I think. It would be a 7 ounce serving of chili. Most guys particularly eat the whole can, which means they're getting 2,000 milligrams of sugar, salt from their simple, quick fix of opening a can of chili and having a rush lunch.
And we're only dealing with the toxic element of the sodium. We're not dealing with all the other toxic ingredients that are in it. Because then that stag chili, of course, has to have what, Simon? High fructose corn syrup. Because how can you make anything without it, right? I don't know how it's gone into every single thing of the packaged foods. So what else did you find in your cabinet?
What I want to know is, why can't I buy high fructose syrup at the store?
Oh, wow. Now we're going to get into one that rocked us. This same immunologist, or Susie is an allergist, told us the story that shocked him.
Oh, we'll get back to your question. You have to hear
the
numbers.
No, this is part of the question.
Okay.
And what he said to us is that he was having trouble with patients post-surgery, particularly children, and he determined the reason was there was high fructose corn syrup use in the making of dextrose, which is administered IV to patients in the hospital.
Now, dextrose is considered, in the emergency room when I worked at, it was considered one of the safe things you would use. It's just nothing more than sugar and water, and it's sterilized.
Except the sugar now is being derived from genetically modified corn, the Monsanto BT, which is a toxin corn that incidentally causes insects' digestive systems to rot out. In fact, well, I won't even get into our foreign problems with the product, but every patient sitting in the hospital getting an IV drip of what they think is simple sugar is getting sugar from genetically modified corn, which is synthetic, high in pesticide content. They use hydrochloric acid to refine it in many instances, and they're putting this into your IV. And then when you come to, they give you things like Jell-O, which has high fructose corn syrup, and a huge amount of other things. So while you're sitting in the hospital, you're being pumped up on corn products.
And the irony was, I guess it would be considered irony, is that the minute he cut out using this particular IV of dextrose and water, he no longer had problems with any of his patients post-op after surgery.
Wow.
Are you there, Simon? Is that a wow?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I can't get over it. I mean, how can this be? What is happening to people taking care of people?
Well, it's not about people. What's happening to our government that permits all of this to happen? Of course, if you ask anyone in the FDA, there's absolutely nothing wrong with high fructose corn syrup. It's identical to sugar.
And we read the GMO studies. And I'm going to remind people again how when they first started with the GMO studies, the rats had to be force-fed the GMO tomatoes. Now, rats and mice love tomatoes. We know we grow them. And they had to be force-fed, and then they had bleeding, and some of them died within 30 days. Now, I mean, these tests, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of documents on GMO and how bad it is for people. And now it's in the Intervena, so people whose immune systems and problems are already down.
Wow.
That is a wow. I'm still wowed by it.
I still can't believe you're going to the hospital for surgery and you're being fed high fructose corn syrup and an IV drip. It's just mind-boggling to me.
Okay. One of the things that I really do enjoy with working with the pair of you is that I've figured out where some of your hot buttons are.
Don't tell my wife.
So I think it's time to hit one.
Okay.
Let's talk about the FDA. I'm pretty certain that if Manny had his way, he'd ship the entire lot of them to The Hague and have them put on trial by the World Court on war crimes charges.
Well, no, actually, I'm sympathetic to the FDA because the rank-and-file FDA employees are manipulated and controlled by basically the politics of their office. And to give an example, you know, almost every member of the science staff of the FDA opposed GMO foods. They weren't listened to by the politically appointed people above them. My complaint with the FDA would be solved in one swift move. If the FDA were turned into a political office and you could vote for the head of the FDA, it would stop the interference by corporations as well as it would stop the interference by the president, because the president of the United States, no matter who he is, affects the FDA with his political decisions based upon who contributes money to him. So at the end of the day, you got a situation where the president of the United States is not really motivated to reform it. So it could be solved, and I point to California. Californians became just sick and tired of the problems with car insurance. So a number of years back, we had a referendum, and we decided to vote to turn the insurance commissioner away from the governor's office into a non-political office in terms of that, where people could run for office. And guess what? We started appointing insurance commissioners who weren't beholden to the industry, and the cost of insurance in California dropped rapidly. So there are a lot of reasons why we could improve, ways we could improve the FDA, And the single most important one of them is to take it out of political hands. Last week I read you a survey that showed from concerned scientists that more than 60% of the people in the FDA felt that they were being intimidated by not only the drug companies, but Congress. So here we have our Congress who find political people come to them. They're basically people make contributions from the major corporations, go, look, you got to do something about the FDA. We're not going to contribute money to you. So then we have these particular members of Congress going to the FDA for the benefit of their local drug manufacturers trying to sway policy in the FDA that may not be good for the American citizens because they are beholden to these particular companies. So do I find that repulsive? Yes, I do, and I hope every American feels the same way I do.
One of the things that the FDA did do, and at first glance, it seems to be a positive step, and that is product labeling. Your can of baked beans or your box of cake mix has two sets of information on it. First off, ingredients. But as I understand it, this is somewhat misleading.
Absolutely.
Right, they hide ingredients.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
Do you want to give me an example of a hidden ingredient?
Well, of course, the classic and most famous one is MSG. When MSG became a hot-button issue in the late 60s, they removed it from the market but put it back in a yeast extract and a variety of other different products. So basically, MSG never really left products like baby food, and that was one of the major concerns, is that just about every researcher in the country believes that MSG is harmful to children. So basically, every child now, toddler, et cetera, are eating baby food with MSG in it, which is highly addictive. So you wonder why these children are having obesity problems. Well, they're being started on the addiction course very, very early in their lives. So that's probably the most serious one. But even then, if you're out of those major categories, in fact, you and I had a conversation recently about some foods that you pulled out of your cabinet, and we did, and you asked, well, why aren't more chemicals listed? And I said, because they're not legally required to. So if they're not required to do it, it's not in there. And there are people every day in these various corporate offices who sit around going, okay, what can we use that won't show up on the label? I mean, you can almost see them like a scene out of the TV show Mad Men or something, where they're all sitting around scheming and finding something they can do to get away from, you know, public disclosure. That's what they're paid to do.
One of the most offensive to me, and I mean most, and now MSG and the excitotoxins are extremely offensive. The sodium nitrate is extremely offensive. Of all the offensive things to me, the fact that the FDA took it upon itself to not label GMO foods because they were afraid people would be biased and they wouldn't buy it. Now, what kind of excuse is that? Of course I wouldn't have bought it. I was asking in the 90s when I first started hearing about GMO if GMO was in my food. People would shrug their shoulders. The grocery store, I'd ask the managers, I'd ask the buyers. No one would give me an answer. And in Europe, they demand, if you're going to use GMO, they demand it be on the label. Now, part of this month, they're having a GMO stores are doing an anti-GMO.
The variety of stores, more than 600 of them joined together and declared October anti-GMO month, which is interesting. And people, I'll give you an example, Gatorade stopped taking high fructose corn syrup out of theirs as well as some other products. And if people show up enough, care enough, and make enough noise, then we'll start curbing genetically modified foods. The interesting thing is this revolution is catching hold. And as I read articles on the financial page, the profits of Monsanto, who's the principal manufacturer of this, were reduced somewhere around 15 or 20% last year because people are starting to step away from genetically modified foods.
Only because of awareness. Because, again, Simon, it was the federal government decided, oh, okay, nobody needs to know this on the label.
Right.
I just think that is so wrong that I'm actually stunned by it. I'm stunned that somebody can make that decision about our health.
I'm never stunned when a government abandons us for the benefits of someone with a lot of money that's leading some kind of lobbying effort. And my wife and I have this discussion all the time. I said, why are you stunned by the greed and manipulations of people in government? Every American is disgusted with the way our government is being run right now, and this is just a typical example of what we're all disgusted about.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, there wasn't any bailout package for book reviewers or authors.
Well, there should have been, but no. No, we didn't have enough political might to get any of that money, and neither did most other Americans. But then again, we're back to the same basic issue. There's a double standard here. If you look at some of these, the joke is really only a major corporation can get away with this, because a mom-and-pop business can't get away with some of the things we're discussing. Nobody would allow them to. In fact, no one who operates a mom-and-pop business would even consider asking the government to give them some kind of special preference like that.
Right.
Simon, one of the things we had talked about this week was talking about the raid that happened in Venice. Did you know about that raid in Venice, which the police went in, and they went into Venice, which is Venice, California, which is a small little town. It's about 3.1 square miles, population roughly 40,000 people.
Actually, it's right next to the famous Marina del Rey in Santa Monica, and it's a well-known Los Angeles area that is used on television shows all the time for a variety of backgrounds. We see all those people riding, on on the skateboards, and all these dancers.
Oh, yes, I know Venice Beach. Yeah.
Well, you've been here, and I know you.
But some people may not know it, so that's why I'm talking about Venice and explaining it a little bit, because it's a quiet, and you know Venice, Simon. It's a very quiet little place. So there's this quiet little organic grocery store, and in July, the latter part of July, the police went in there with guns into this, you know, very quiet, organic, past the organics and everything else and all the fruits and vegetables, and it's called Rossum Awesome Foods in Venice. And they went in, and they took the yogurt and the raw milk, and they took all the raw dairy with guns ablaze, just pointing their guns, to go and clear off all their shelves and basically shut down the store, because they're saying that the raw milk is causing E. coli, it's causing salmonella, it's causing diarrhea and kidney failure if you get salmonella. I want to know why this never happened at Rite Aids. Now, I mean, this again gets back to your question about the FDA. It's very confusing to me. How can you go in guns ablaze into an organic, clean, quiet little place, people making choices on the type of organic raw foods they want to eat and eat and drink, and are now being told by the government that they cannot have anything other than what the government is regulating? This was really a scary fact to me, and I think people ought to hear about this.
Yeah, I don't see them busting into major corporations. They always pick people who are weak and don't have the financial ability to fight back. But, you know, we're talking about food police here. And while we're talking about this issue with the FDA, the FDA approved something called RBGH, which stands for recombinant bovine growth hormone. And they give this synthetic hormone to dairy cows to make them produce not only more milk, but to produce milk during the off-season for cows. So Monsanto invented it. Of course it's synthetic. We should preface it with that. Monsanto is the father of this particular negative product, too, and they formed a group whose name I don't always remember, the American Farmers for Technology, who proceeded to try and pass laws in every state they possibly could to eliminate organic milk as a competitor. I found it humorous that the only state that was successful in passing the law was the state of Ohio, and having relatives in Ohio over a period of time, I've come to find that they do some rather unusual things. And this certainly is one of them. Well, it eventually went up to the Supreme Court. It was filed in federal court and went to the Circuit Court of Appeals, who issued a decision a couple weeks ago that basically said that, you know, basically milk from these type of dairy cows is not the same as organic milk, that it has more pus in it, it has lower protein levels, it has other flaws in it that make it different. But the industry is still trying to insist it's identical, and they basically told the FDA they were wrong, despite the fact that FDA maintains that it is identical to regular milk. So despite even being slapped down by a court in Ohio, which is even stranger to me, they are continuing to maintain that this is what they like to call nature identical. I mean, who came up with this term, nature identical?
Now, and this nature identical, to clarify the pus in the milk, is that this particular synthetic hormone causes there to be pus in the milk. So subsequently, in order to combat the pus in the milk, they put an antibiotic, which increases in more antibiotics, which are, again, one of the battles against the non-organic foods. And, of course, you don't see that on that label, do you? There's no they don't have to label synthetic hormones on your label, nor do they have to say we've used a lot of antibiotics to kind of try to counter this effect of this nature-identical product we're using. And more offensively is the fact that this is actually created through the gene splicing. They insert the DNA into E. coli bacterium. All the reasons they said we're going into Venice and we're going to take this because it's going to cause salmonella and we're going to, with our guns ablaze, take all of your organic milk and raw milk. But meanwhile, on every grocery store that has non-organic milk, they have spliced it with the E. coli bacterium, and it's separated to form the RBST, which is a synthetic hormone. The producers, of course, are the companies that support it are Monsanto, Eli Lilly, Upjohn, and American Cyanide, which are all companies that also happen to have, you know, they're drug companies. So, of course, they're going to support their synthetic hormone. You know, and it's banned in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and most of Europe, which now Monsanto is, of course, suing and going after the World Trade Organization to try to force people in Europe to have milk that they shouldn't be having. I mean, it's incredible. Get me going on the labels there, Simon.
Okay. I'm looking at the clock here, and I'm looking at my list of questions, and I just know that I'm not going to get to them all. So I vote we do a shameless commercial break. Tell us about your books, where people can buy them, and when your next book is going to be coming out.
Well, our books, Arthritis, Inflammation, Gout, Crohn's, IBD, and IBS, as well as Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula. You can be purchased on our website, howtoeliminatepain.com. Those who do purchase at our website, it comes autographed with a $5 donation to the Cultural Heritage Society of Louisiana. And if you're in an area where you want it done easier through Amazon for you or some other one, you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and 39 other booksellers, as we joke, even in South Africa and China, and purchase a book, and they'll ship it to you. We recommend reading the arthritis book first with a diet to follow because they are companion books. Our third book in the trilogy is coming out the day before Thanksgiving, and it's called It's Not Your Fault, Weight Gain, Obesity, and Food Addiction, and it goes to the very subjects we're talking about today, why people are addicted to foods and what chemicals in your food are making you addicted. So,
and weight gain, causing the weight gain, and people to be unhealthy.
The primary subject is people right now are being blamed for behavioral problems. Oh, you eat too much of the burgers. You eat too much of that. You got to stop yourself. And everybody's being treated like some mass hysteria in their behavioral problems, causing people to eat too much food, when in fact they're being subtly addicted to all these chemicals, and the minute you give up these chemicals, you're no longer addicted. And I'll give you an example. Do you know that simple Hershey candy bars have high fructose corn syrup, and so do most of the other candy bars? So here you are eating chocolate. People who say they're chocoholics are really corn syrupaholics. They're so addicted to the corn syrup, MSG, and other things in these candy bars they don't even get to the issue of whether they're addicted to chocolate. So we're taking that straight up, and we're hoping to help people who are struggling with weight problems across our country to look at the foods they eat. And we're not suggesting you give up burgers. We're suggesting you make organic ones at home. If you want to eat fries, you get organic potatoes, not factory farm GMO potatoes, and you make them yourself. And you can use non-genetically modified oils and a variety of other things. And just by giving that up, those salts and high salt, which we discussed a little bit earlier, and a few things very basic, people can drop 20 pounds. I dropped 70 pounds, 80 pounds now over a period of the last year without dieting. This morning I got up and I barbecued some pork, half a turkey, made some buffalo burgers for Ashley's.
And everything's organic.
They're all organic, so we eat the same thing everyone else is. We just eat it with all the crap in it. So if you read our book,
Jan and I are on our way. Hold on.
Come on over, Simon.
That.
I would love that.
I can tell you, once you start eating organic food, you'll never go back.
We have friends already saying, so what time is lunch? Can I have it at your house?
And that's one of the biggest issues is, you know, if you want to forget about all of these issues of health, people love great-tasting food. Well, if you eat genetically modified foods while there's crap in it, you're eating crappy-tasting food.
I can now taste the difference. I didn't think I'd ever be able to taste it. I can now taste it. I'm astonished by it.
Even the difference between an organic chicken and a Tyson's chicken pumped with salt brine.
50%.
So dramatic, you'll go, I'll never eat another Tyson chicken again. And I hope they're listening. Because when they're asked about putting the salt brine in, they tell you they know more about what people should eat than what people know. And I find that insulting for a corporation to start telling me they know more about what I should be eating than I do. And I think every American feels the same way.
Oh, I'm with you. But I'm going to put a challenge out to you. Family of four, mother, father, two preteen kids, mum and dad work all day, they get home. Give me an idea of something they could cook, that would take, let's say, 90 minutes to feed everyone, and it would be healthy.
Well, they're look at the meal I fixed today. Part of our new book, which is Manny and Ashley's Organic Growing and Cookbook, which is our book after the It's Not Your Fault, we give recipes for this. This morning,
and in,
example,
in the diet book, there's recipes.
Right.
As well.
And there are probably 40 pages of recipes in our diet
and
book.
And planning, diet planning.
So I took a pork loin this morning, which you can buy in any store, which is round. It looks like a long sausage.
Organic,
or you can get the, and if you can't, you buy the best quality you can. And you slice them long ways, so you end up with strips that are maybe a half to half inch, maximum three quarters thick. Usually you can cut them into three strips, sometimes four. And I put them on the grill, or if you can't grill outside and you're going to cook inside, you can saute them and just attach the butter. No cheap oils, no margarine. Stay with pure butter. It's healthier for you. Lightly saute it for about 2 minutes on either side. I use organic curry, white pepper, and as I joke with you, I like my Louisiana-style seasoning. I recommend Fat Boy out of Louisiana. Great.
It's our only cheat for the week.
Our only cheat. But even then, you use just a sprinkle to make it a little spicier, and you pull those off, and you can do a variety of things with them. When you cut them, they're about, probably 13, 14 inches long when you cook them. I cut them into small pieces. I can chop them up and throw them into a flour wrap like a tortilla and throw tomatoes, avocado, or sometimes, mayo, mustard, whatever, organic, whatever your choice is, and wrap it up, and you can eat it as a wrap, or you can serve it straight up with organically baked potatoes, which can be done in a little over an hour. And if you have natural corn, you can boil corn in 20 minutes, and I recommend a very small amount of stevia in the water, which helps take the rough edge on the corn, make it a little sweeter, and you've got a simple meal. And you can take the leftover pork from that, if it's more than enough to feed your family, chop it up and put it in some barbecue sauce, heat it up, heat the barbecue up,
What's the recipe for the hummus and the recipe?
Take the chopped, pour it, throw it in there, stir it up, and put it in a container and cover it and let it soak it up, and the next day you can have barbecue pork. So, and if you have 90 minutes, you can, what we do is we buy small organic hens, which are around 14 pounds. I cut them in half, and then I will grill, or I throw it in the oven with white pepper, a curry, and again a touch of the sauce, and I throw it in the there for an hour and a half. Usually a 7-pound turkey, you need about 300, 275, probably 300 degrees. And then about 10 minutes before it comes out of the oven, I take a mixture of butter, garlic, and a teaspoon of a pure jelly, like blackberry,
organic.
I like strawberry or raspberry. Raspberry is probably the tastiest. And I put them in a little dish, and I melt them in the microwave, and then I put it as a spread on top of the turkey and shut the oven off and let it do a glacé. So you end up with a raspberry garlic turkey that is just outrageous, with rosemary and all the other things that go into it. And, of course, you can chop rosemary fine as I do. You can buy the rosemary in the store as opposed to buying. Don't buy the bottle of rosemary. It's junk. It's dried. It's tasteless. And I just clip it with the scissors, and that also adds the flavor. So, and if you don't finish the turkey, you can come home the next night, and you got cold turkey, a little barbecue pork, and in Ashley's case, she likes a burger. I take a pound of hamburger, and I chop up the rosemary, and I throw in, I mix it like you would a meatloaf with curry, white pepper, et cetera, and then I make three little burgers, which is about 5.5 ounces each, make them very thick, and then I cook them at the same time as I do the pork and other things. And you can cut them in half and make a hamburger. You can put them in the refrigerator and pull them out and heat up in the microwave. We cook them medium rare to rare. So if you heat them up in the microwave, it finishes the cooking without it being well done. And you can have 3 or 4 days' food at one time in 90 minutes to 2 hours, but you'll have a great hot meal. You have lunch left over for the next day for the kids if you want to send them to school with a organic pork sandwich on a good piece of bread.
Organic breads. I'm able to find organic stuff everywhere now.
And I'll tell you, the organic breads are fabulous. I have a weak gluten problem. They don't make me sick. I can eat bread again. So you can give your child a sandwich made of 2 slices of organic bread with the pork in it with a little organic mayo, and he will not only not gain weight, he'll be 100 times healthier than he is eating the garbage. And guess what? It's cheaper. It's cheaper partly because the cost of organic food is coming down, and partly we found we stopped eating a large amount of food. Where I'd eat, you know, maybe 2 chicken breasts, now I eat maybe 1/2 a chicken breast. Not because I'm trying to cut down, it's because I'm just not really hungry
anymore. It tastes great and you're full.
Yeah.
And the salads, Manny couldn't eat a salad for years, Simon. And now he's able to eat the organic lettuce that I get from the farmer's market. I mean, my favorite is Eugene's and at the farmer's market here. And it's fantastic. It's all organic fruits and vegetables. And he's able to have these fruits and vegetables that he was too sick and could not process or break down. And the salad, of course, is a perfect, easy thing to do. And then for the turkey, if a mom wants to do noodles, there's organic noodles available, organic creams.
And for those of you who love chickens, if you can find a local place where you can buy your chicken off a farm, cut and get a really fresh chicken, they're really incredible tasting. But if you take a chicken and butterfly it by cutting it along the back spine with a sharp knife and then spreading it out and laying it flat, and you can cook it the same way in the oven, you can cook that probably in an hour and 20 minutes because it's flat and it cooks more evenly. So you can do that instead of the half turkey. So as we go along every week, we can show you ways that you can cook in an hour to hour and a half. And you're talking about a tasty smoked chicken, turkey, you're talking about pork here, and you're talking about corn, potatoes, everything everybody wants to eat. And guess what? You're not giving up anything. Instead, you're getting a better taste and a healthier food.
But how does cost factor in?
Well, for example, the chickens. I will buy organic whole chickens and organic chicken breasts, organic hamburger, and they are cheaper than, I mean, it's so cheap to buy them over at Costco. They have those three organic products, and they sell them in bulk, so it's 2 chickens for the price of one. And so the cost factor is really reduced. And then during Thanksgiving, we actually have an extra freezer. I purchase organic turkeys at that time so that I will pick up 6 organic turkeys. I split them in half. We freezer bag them, and they are then used throughout the year.
Well, most people don't have the ability to store them because of my health condition, we go to a great deal of effort to do that, and it also is easier for us to put them out. But if you buy one turkey at a time, you can eat half and put the other one in the freezer, so a family can take it out the day before, defrost, and have it ready to cook on the next day. And one of the things I suggest is you cook some of this on Sunday, and if you cook the turkey and all the things we suggest one time on Sunday and put them into the glass containers that are now becoming popular for food storage, you may have 3 or 4 days of really great meals, so you may find yourself only cooking twice a week. We cook right now once, sometimes twice a week, but we're only 2 people. So if you have 4, you have 2 children, a family of 4, you're going to probably have to cook 2, maybe 3 days a week, not 7 days a week. Because most people do cook 2 days a week, maximum 3, and the other 4 to 5 days they pick up fast foods. Well, this will cut out the fast foods. And I don't care what anybody says, unless you're eating dollar meals, cooking this food at home is cheaper than going to restaurants, certainly cheaper than pizzas being delivered. A half a turkey is cheap, is about the same price as a Domino's pizza. So what would you rather have, a Domino's pizza gone in a day or 7 pounds of turkey? So in the long run, we found our food costs was cut more, probably a third of what we used to spend.
No, absolutely.
And that's the element, Simon, that shocked us. We did not expect that. We expected to spend more money because my health was so important, and now we laugh that we're spending less money than ever.
I like it, and as I said, Jan and I are coming over for dinner.
Oh, I would love that, Simon.
And Simon, I got one last thing I want to add because I know your clock's ticking. You live in an area where it's hard to find farmers markets, and some of these fruits aren't available in a local market. We discussed asking the manager to get some of these. Sometimes they'll special order. If you want organic chickens and turkeys, they'll order them. And they'll bring them in for you, 1 or 2. They don't mind because frequently the same distributors have access to organics and non-organics. But many of these products you can find on the Internet. If you don't have a Whole Foods where you can buy organic peppers, you can get them on the Internet. And frankly, some of them are cheaper by $1 or 2 than what you'll pay in a retail store. So when you compare the online prices, there are some that are very high. I've seen people who ship organic turkeys that I think must be made of gold because they want like $200 for a 25-pound turkey.
And I guarantee you, it has never flown into my house.
Yeah.
I'm this cheap. I figure it out, you know.
Let me tell you, at $200 for turkey, it better do windows and floors. So, but if you look, you will find deals everywhere. And you need to look for local farmers that want to sell retail besides, because sometimes they do a nice business and it's a quick cash business for the family where that's easier than dealing with wholesalers who are trying to screw them all the time. So at the end of the day, a little thought into it, and boy, you can not only find some great foods that taste 100% better, but you can do it cheaper than dealing with the high markups in a supermarket. And when you live in a smaller town as you do, the cost of getting that food there is high, and your cost of food in a smaller town is generally much higher than a competitive market like Los Angeles, Chicago, and other places that are hubs for the distribution of food. So you're not only being penalized by not having organic foods, but many people are penalized by paying much higher prices for substandard foods.
Okay, my producer is whining in my ear. It is time to close this program down. I didn't get to half of the questions I had, so I am hoping that you'll be available next week, and we can do this all again.
So, Simon, is this the same list that Ashley told you we could get done in 20 minutes?
Yeah, right.
We would love to come back, and I hope everyone comes back, because we're going to start giving menus every week. We're going to start giving food suggestions, and we're going to start giving tips on how to avoid all these pitfalls and all these things of making them ill, and at the same time show them how to enjoy their meals much more than they have. And thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Simon. Oh, and Simon, if anybody listening have questions, that they can email now, any time up until the show or through the show, so that we can answer questions. I'm more than happy to do research for anybody to get them healthy. That's my goal as a nurse.
Yeah, just go to our website, howtoeliminatepain.com.
Or to your website.
Or to your website, and you can forward them to us, and we'll be happy to personally respond to anyone who has questions about any of these things. And of course, if they want some picks on the football games or something, we'll do those on our
not, that's not a we dear, that's a you dear. Simon, thank you so much, and thank you so much to the listeners. I appreciate everyone who has taken the time to listen to the show, and I hope that we've been a help.
Actually, I have one last question for you. Can you possibly email me one of your recipes? I would love to include it in my next article.
Well, my suggestion to you, Simon, is go grab your copy of Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula and go to the second meal of the day where we discuss the larger meals, and you will find dozens of them, including our organic spaghetti recipe, how to barbecue and smoke these various forms of chicken and turkey, and scores of other little things in there. And if you're really good with Thanksgiving coming up next week, remind Ashley to give you her story, how she makes the most fabulous Thanksgiving gravy and how she does her Irish mashed potatoes.
With no bottles.
No bottles, no junk. And I want to tell you, our friends line up for Thanksgiving around here. So we'll put those on your list, and Ashley will do those next week for our listeners, and give me a call if you need some help with the diet book.
Okay. All right. It's been delightful talking to you, but it always is. Until next week, have a safe time in Southern California.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Simon.